Good afternoon, folks. Thanks for your time. We are glad to have you here in this room. And I am Rajneesh. Here I am without the sunglasses. And if you want to catch me later outside the LinkedIn booth. With me, I have Ranjit, who is my counterpart as production SRE. And today, we'll be talking about event correlation, a fresh approach towards reducing MTTR. I'll quickly go through the agenda. So I'll be covering a bit introduction on my team and what we do, then what was the problem statement which inspired us to do this project. I'll also go through the architecture considerations on what were the thought process, why we took some decisions, why we ignored a few of the things. I'll hand over to Ranjit for explaining you the complete ecosystem of event correlation. Post that, I'll also talk about the big picture, how this event correlation framework fits into the LinkedIn infrastructure. What are the key takeaways for you guys to see how you can use the same concepts to help yourself? And then we'll open up for questions and answers. If we don't get enough time for questions and answers, we have a LinkedIn booth just on your right, and we'll be there to answer all those questions. All right. Quick introduction. Ranjit Rajan is part of production SRE team, and he joined LinkedIn in 2016. I joined LinkedIn in 2015, and I lead the production SRE team. A bit of background on the production SRE team. We, as a team, are more involved into making sure that how we can reduce the MTTR and make the life of other SREs and dev teams easier. We do a lot of programs. We write a lot of programs and tools to make sure that SiteOps, Knox, devs, SREs, they can use those tools to improve their efficiency. So our main focus is to, if you want to see it in a one line of aim, it is to reduce the MTTR and make your lives easy. I'll go to the problem statement, why we started this project, what was the basic problems which we faced. So this is a graph which you'll be able to correlate very easily. Don't worry about the data stuff, what are the data points, it's more a symbolic representation. So if you see, as service complexity increases, there are two things which change. One is reliability goes down. Reason being, there are so many moving parts, and at some point of time, one or the other part will not behave the way it should be. The learning curve goes up. So if you are a small or a big SRE team, in the microservices world, the services are changing so fast, features are being developed so fast today that by the time we get an expert and we become an expert in one service, the other corresponding services or the services which are interacting with your service has changed so fast that you are always on your toes to learn very quickly. So we want to solve, first thing, we want to make sure that somehow we can solve this autonomously. I see a lot of folks taking pictures. These slides should be available, so don't worry about it. I'll make it available. All right. The other problem statement is, due to these complex microservices, it is very difficult for us to identify the root cause. So right now, if you see, we have at LinkedIn, we have almost 1.5K microservices, which have all different kind of mappings and interactions with some of the other services. Now, everything keeps on changing on a regular basis, so it's really, really difficult to when an issue happens, it is really difficult to like traverse what paths a call has taken, what is the response code, what should be the expectation of the callee container, what should be the expectation of the service which is calling the service, and that delays the identification of root cause. The second thing is false escalation. So I think most of the SREs, SiteOps, DevOps, or other orgs which you have been part of, you have always faced a situation where you have got a call at the mid of the night and like there is some issue going on, but when you checked, you found that, yeah, it is an issue, but it is not because of the service I own. It is because of a downstream service or an upstream service, and there's nothing much I can do about it. So a wrong team has been called. So if I give you a scenario, for instance, you have an N-tier application infrastructure. If N minus second tier has gone bad and your N minus one-th tier is getting impacted, both the service owners get called, which is not the right way to do it, right? So you are a responsible service, you should get called. If you are an impacted service, probably you should not be get called. You should get a soft escalation via an email or something that your service is impacted, but you are not the responsible cause. So these are the two other problems which we generally face and which take a huge amount of time. The time being because the NOC or SITOPS contacts SREs to do some stuff, and then SREs sometimes talk to devs to do some stuff, and that loses a lot of time, and we lose a lot of time in communication to each and other team. So those are the four basic problems which we are looking to solve. One is the learning curve should not be steep, your reliability should increase, you should have a low MTTR, and you should not be part of false escalations. So before we go on to what we wanted to do, I would like to set context on what are the scenarios we are going to solve. So the applicable use cases for this product or project or philosophy is that we are not talking about something has failed due to an external event. So for instance, if you are using synthetic monitoring and one of the backbone links has gone down for an ISP, your site is not opening for one or the other region, that is not something we are looking at right now. We are looking at something where your core system is not performing in the way and how we can troubleshoot and fix those issues. So the request should have entered in your ecosystem and then should have given an error or facing latency or not getting the results which is inside your ecosystem. That is the problem we need to quickly fix about. So this talk is more about those scenarios. All right, so let's go to architecture considerations, like what we wanted to do, what are the expectations when we started this project. So first thing we wanted to do was metrics analysis. LinkedIn pushes somewhere in the range of 15 million metrics per minute to whatever Kafka stream we have. And we wanted to do a real-time and ad hoc metric analysis to get results. Both real-time and ad hoc metric analysis have their own pros and cons. So the real-time metric analysis is very fast. You can do a lot of advanced analytics on that, but the con is that it is pretty resource intensive. All right. So you need to put a lot of infrastructure to run those real-time. Ad hoc metric analysis is cheap. You can do it offline, and it needs an input to be given to the system to do that. But it's slow, and you may or may not be able to do a lot of advanced analytics because you don't get all the parameters at the same time. Then there's alert correlation. So I want to differentiate between metrics and alert correlation. So metrics is raw data which your systems are pushing into your stream. Alert is when those metrics cross a threshold, right? So we wanted to do both of them. We wanted to analyze metrics. We wanted to see once the alert has popped into my dashboard, is it correlated to some other alerts? Because if some of your services are not performing and the other downstream or upstream services are getting impacted, there'll be alerts flying over everywhere. But we need not work on all the alerts, right? So we need to work only on the alerts which are for the responsible service. So alert correlation was important and which we wanted to do so that we can correlate those alerts and reduce the number of false escalations or reduce the number of teams who are getting involved. We wanted to build a recommendation engine. What this recommendation engine should do is that it should recommend you a responsible service. It should also recommend you that what has gone wrong for that responsible service to some extent. It may not be accurate, but at least some indication on this is the root cause and what has went wrong, probably what has went wrong with this service. As the saying goes, then we come to visualization. As the saying goes that a picture is better than 1,000 words. seeing visually in a state of your system in front of you sometimes helps you a lot to correlate things. So a lot of teams which have regular monitoring dashboards in front of them, for instance, SiteOps or NOC, they can keep on looking at the state of the system and say if something goes wrong, they can be quicker than sometimes over a period of time they gain that experience and they can respond to it pretty much quickly. So we wanted to build the visualization component itself into the project. Now what we're talking about is recommendation engine visualization, but it seems to be a bit incomplete unless we kind of take some action on it, right? So we have recommended something, a service which has gone wrong or what has gone wrong, but there's nothing, a manual intervention is still needed to take an action and fix that issue, that completes the system. So we don't want it to do manual intervention. We wanted to make sure that there is a system which actually takes that recommendations and executes an action on it so that the workload which the SREs, dev or DevOps or the other teams have, they reduces because they don't have to go and still do some manual stuff. So those were the five basic pillars under which we wanted to work on this project. And these are the basic guiding principles for us to see that how that project gets developed and what all did we do to take care of all these five principles. So from here, I'll hand over to Ranjit, who will give you a detailed introduction into what are the kind of tools, what is the philosophy we adopted, and let you know that why we took some decisions and why we ignored some of them. So over to Ranjit.
Thank you, Rajneesh. So I'll be taking you through the event correlation overview, and I'll be explaining you some of the implementation details, okay? Okay. So LinkedIn uses microservices architecture. So we have around 1,500 microservices. So we need to understand how these services are connected to each other, how they are communicating with each other before building a correlation system. Okay, so we need to understand the architecture, the entire architecture. So where do you look for this information? We usually look for this in a design document, wiki pages, or you have to ask some of the experts in that area. The point is that all these informations are scattered in different places, and you don't have one place where you can find the entire architecture of your stack. So that is one of the problem. The other problem is that after a new release or a code push or a feature change, these dependencies changes, and often people don't update this in your, for example, architecture diagram, and soon these will become obsolete and you cannot rely on them. So, and thirdly, all these diagrams, for example, architecture diagram, the design documents are all for humans. As a human, you can go and look at this picture and see how these services are connected to this service, what is the protocol using, but you cannot actually use it to build a tool. The tool cannot interpret it. Okay, so we wanted to build a tool that can programmatically and automatically map the entire microservices architecture and build a dependency graph, and it should be able to automatically update it if there is a change, like a service got removed or a new resource or endpoint got added to a service. So it should be picked up automatically. Okay, so we decided to build a tool and how to build that tool. So in LinkedIn, these services use a certain protocol such as RESTly. It's an open source protocol, Voldemort, Espresso, et cetera, et cetera. The point is that these protocols use a service discovery mechanism where when a service comes online, it goes to a registry and registry itself saying that, oh, this is my service name. These are the protocols available, and these are the endpoints you need to connect to. Okay, so if the service gets a new resources or new endpoints get added, it will update that registry. So you can collect this information from this registry for all the services, and soon you have the information to build the dependency, one part of information to build the dependency graph. But this information is not enough to build the dependencies graph because you still don't know who is going to communicate to that services. Okay. So fortunately, in LinkedIn, all the services follow a standard. The standard is that when a service is communicating to other services, it will create a matrix with the destination service name, the protocol, and the endpoint it is communicating to. So we can grab this information from our monitoring system, and we have the service registry information. Together, we can build a dependency graph. All you have to do is you have to put the pieces of the puzzles together, and you can do it programmatically. Okay. So we built this tool called CallGraph. Okay, CallGraph creates this dependency automatically and programmatically, and it keeps on updating it if there is a change. And it has an interface, an API, where if your program wants to do something with this dependency graph, it can query that API. It can get the details to do some wonderful things. It also has a user interface where if I want to know the dependency of my service, I can go and say, OK, this is my service. Give me the upstream and downstream services and the protocol and endpoints available. So I can get that. So it helps for engineers also to understand the hundreds of dependencies for your microservice. And it's easy for people to actually, you don't have to actually remember all these dependencies. And it's hard when you have the thousands of services. OK, so when we are creating this call graph, we are anyway scraping the monitoring system and getting the metrics. So we decided to store the latency error and the call count between any two services and its endpoints. Okay, this is a useful information when it comes to correlation, and I'll explain you how it is done in a later slide. Okay, so now that we have created the dependency graph of our entire architecture, it's time to build a correlation system. Okay, consider this situation. You have a service with very high latency. Okay, one of the approach to debug this is to using the graph. There are multiple approaches, and one of the approaches is to using the graph. So you can go to your graph, load the graph, and look for this metrics and see when the latency spike started, what is the trend of it, is it ended or still going on. So you understand this information. You go and load the other graphs. Okay, you go to the dependency services graph, see if there is a timeout or a latency increase or error rate similar to this, and you can keep on doing until you find the responsible service. So what you are trying to do is you are visually correlating these metrics, all right? So you are manually correlating. But this can take a lot of time when you have like so many downstream services and so many dependencies. You are spending a lot of time on investigating. Okay, what if there is a system that can do the correlation for you? It can save a lot of time, and you can actually use that time to actually fix the issues. Okay, so the idea is that, and we decided to build a system that can do the metrics correlation. So one of the approaches, we tried different approaches, and one of the approaches we tried was using the simple threshold method. So if you have a service with problem, you find the metrics which indicates a communication between, say, latency and error metrics, which indicate a communication between this service and a downstream service, see if any of that metrics cross the threshold, then follow that path and keep on doing until you somehow find a responsible service. These has many problems, and one of the silly problems we faced was that not all the metrics has their threshold defined. So your service may have like hundreds of metrics, and you will define the threshold only for the certain important metrics. So how do we apply to all other metrics which doesn't have a threshold? So that was one of the questions we had. And if you have like hundreds of such services, this problem becomes worse. So we decided to try different approaches, some statistical and machine learning approaches. So statistical approaches, we tried some of the ARIMA, various versions of ARIMA, so that we can predict what would be the what would be the matrix at some point of time, and then see how off it is from the actual reading, then try to figure out. So the problem with all these approaches, after evaluating various these approaches, we understood that these are going to be really expensive, because like Rajneesh mentioned, we have like thousands of services, and these services have like a lot of downstream, and there are a lot of matrices, and it's really expensive. Especially for statistical method, they cannot predict more than a few steps ahead without actually losing the accuracy. Okay, so that means you have to actually keep on streaming the data to the statistical model, And the model has to know what exactly was the reading just before so that it can predict the new outcome. So that means you have to do a real-time processing. So when you have a lot of metrics, that real-time processing is not worth doing it. And especially both statistical and machine learning methods has this problem of you have to tune the parameters of the model based on the behavior of the time series data you are processing. For example, your time series may have a seasonality. So the seasonality can be daily, hourly, weekly, monthly, or whatever. So depending on that, you have to find the parameters and you have to tune the model. So you, when you have like a lot of metrics, not possible. Again, it can have a trend. So you have to stabilize that time series so that you can do some processing on that. So after considering these drawbacks and these problems, we decided that we should have a method that is easy to implement that should work for all type of matrices. Okay? So we solved that problem using a k-means method. Okay, we use k-means. K-means is an unsupervised machine learning algorithm. It's a clustering algorithm. So what it can do is it can take a n set of n observations and it can create k clusters out of it. Okay, so the k is the number of clusters you want to create from the observation you are passing to it. The idea behind using k-means is that if you look at the historical data of a matrix, you can come up with a threshold based on the past behavior. And we often do that for the unknown matrices, which we don't know how it was performing. So we look at the how historically how it was performing, and based on that, we will set a threshold. So the idea is similar to that. And one of the advantages of k-means is that you can train it using a set of observations, and you can store this if you are using Python, the scikit-learn library, for example, and you can use it for later use. So after you cluster this observation, if you have a new observation, you can pass it to k-means, and k-means can tell you in which cluster that observation is going to be. Okay, so we use these two concepts. To illustrate that, take an example time series. Okay, this is your training data or historical data. So what you can do is you can divide this into 1 minute intervals or 5 minute intervals or whatever. Then you can drop the time dimension. You take only the values from that. And you can pass it to k-means with k is equal to 3. So that means it will create 3 clusters. So the clusters it will create will look like something like this if you add the time dimension back. Okay. So you have cluster 1, cluster 2, cluster 3. The cluster 1 represents a dip or drop in the time series. Cluster 2, the normal behavior. And most of the data points are going to be in this cluster. Then you have cluster 3, which indicates a spike or peak in the time series values. So basically what k-means did is it identified a dynamic threshold or the cluster boundaries. Based on that, it identified a dynamic threshold looking at the historical data of the matrix. Okay, so we use this idea, and if there is a new observation for this time series, you can pass it to k-means, and k-means can tell you in which cluster that is going to be. So some of the observations are, if they are in cluster 1, that means that reading indicates a drop. If it is in cluster 1, it indicates a normal behavior. If it is in cluster 3, it indicates a spike or increase in the reading. Okay, so if you have a new time series, set of observation for that time series, you can use this method to find out if there is an increase. Because since we are dealing with latency and error metrics, we will be focusing only on cluster 3. Okay, so we use this method to identify if there is an increase or increase in the reading of the time series. And if there is an increase, it will fall in cluster 3. And if it falls in cluster 3, we call that matrix critical, or the time series critical. Okay, so now that we have the method, we need to quantify how critical it is. Okay, we have to identify how critical it is so that we can do some sort of ranking on that. For that, so when k-means creates a cluster, it will identify the cluster center. It will identify a centroid point, which is the center of the clusters. So for each cluster, I have marked the cluster centers with the green lines. Okay, so to find out how critical this matrix is, we compute a predict score. The predict score is computed based on how far the observation are from the cluster center. The idea here is that If the spike is very high, the distance will be high and the predict score will be high. If the spike is low, the distance will be low and the predict score will be low. So this is the one of the approach. This is the approach we use to actually quantify how critical that matrix is. Okay, now for ranking, we don't use predict score alone. We use trend score and weak or weak. Trend score is basically a score that indicates the trend of the time series. To say that, for example, if you have time series and the trend is upwards, the trend score will be high. If the trend is downwards, the trend score will be low. And again, if there is a one-off spike, the trend score will be low. And if the increase is there and it's sustaining, the trend score will be high. Basic idea is that, for example, if you have a time series where there was a spike at the beginning and if it is dropping, we give less weightage to that time series compared to a time series which had a spike at the beginning and still climbing. Also, this method will give very less weightage to one-off spikes. And if the spike is sustaining, the trend score will be high. The weak or weak is the percentage change from the last week of the reading. So together, predict score, trend score, weak or weak, we compute a final score, which is used for the ranking of that particular matrix. So the typical workflow is that, so I explained to you about the k-means method, right? So we take all the microservices, and we find all the, so we have something called downstream latency and downstream error matrix. So the downstream latency, downstream error matrix indicate the latency between this service and the downstream services. So we take all these matrices for all the services for last 1 month. It can be different, but based on our experiment, last 1 month works well. So we take the last 1 month data for all these matrices, downstream latency, downstream error matrix. Then we, using the k-means method, we create a model for each and every matrix. Then we do this offline, then we push it to the correlation system. Now, if you have a service for which you want to find the responsible service, what you'll do is you'll take that service, you will find all the downstream latency and error matrices, then you will find the critical matrices using the k-means method, and you will ignore all the matrices which are normal. Then you follow that path to the critical matrix, then you go to the downstream services, then you keep on doing until you completely process all the critical services. Then you take the score for each of these matrices and you pass it to the front end. In the front end, we compute a score for each of these services, and based on that score, we display the top 5 recommendations. And the recommendation has a score which is 0 to 100. If the score is closer to 100, that means the system is very confident that the recommendation it is giving the actual response will. If it is lower towards 0, then it is not very confident about the recommendation. We also showed some of the graphs that is associated with the matrix we process and the predict score week over week, so that it is for easy for people who use the system to actually understand why the scoring is like that or how the system scored the matrices in that way. Okay, so this is the overview of our matrix correlation system. But if you look at the matrix correlation system, it is not considering one of the important factors, which is alerts. Alerts are important because we set up the alert and we know it is alerting because something has broken or some matrix has caused something. Okay, so alerts are important. For example, consider a situation where one of your service has an alert. So you start debugging. So you have like a lot of services. You check the services first, see if it is okay. Then you go to your downstream service, check if it is okay. And one by one, you go to all the services. And finally, after a long investigation, you find the responsible service. When you analyze the responsible service, you may notice that it also had an alert at the same time, but you had no idea how those alerts were related. So if you look at LinkedIn as a whole, you'll be, or any system as a whole, you'll be seeing a lot of alerts getting fired at different places. But some of these alerts are related, some of them are not related. What if you have a way to actually correlate and say, this alert is because of this alert, or these are related, so this would be the responsible service? We could save a lot of time. You can directly go to that service and check what is wrong. Okay, so you can actually save a lot of time if you have a correlation method that can correlate alerts. So we built a system, and it's called InVisualize because it has a visualization also. So we started InVisualize by collecting the distinct alert for each service from our monitoring system. If a service has an active alert, we will collect that alert. So we'll do this for all the services from the monitoring system. So we do this every minute. In the call graph, you have all the dependencies and the relationship of the services. So we decided to build a correlation model using alerts and the call graph. So we tried different models, tried to put these pieces together and come up with some prediction. But after doing different approaches, this was not working well for us. So it was not giving the correct recommendation. So we understood that we are not using enough information. So just alerts and the call graph is not enough to give a recommendation. So when I explained to you about call graph, I said we are storing the latency, error rate, and the call count between any two services. So we decided to put this also in the correlation model. So for that, we take certain assumptions. One of the assumptions is that higher the number of distinct alert a service has, the more likely it is broken or it is affected by a downstream services. And the second assumption is that higher the number of call count between one service and the downstream service, then the downstream service is more important to the upstream service. For example, if you have a service A talking to B and C, A to B you have like 1,000 calls per second, A to C you have like 10 calls per second, then you can say that B is more important to A compared to C. The third assumption is that higher the change in latency or error rate to a downstream, more likely that downstream is broken for the upstream service. Again, A to B, A to C. A to B, you have like 50% latency increase. A to C, you have, say, 5% latency increase. Then you can say that for A, B is more broken compared to C. And these assumptions are not true all the time. There are a lot of exceptions to this assumption. But together, these assumptions give, when you make this assumption, together they can give you a positive result. We also make other assumptions such as how many upstream services are converging to a downstream, how many of them are alerting, etc. So using all these assumptions and the data from monitoring system, the alert data from the monitoring system, InVisualize or the alert correlation system computes the state of the system and it identifies the responsible services and the affected services. Then it creates a cool visualization that looks something like this. I have masked the name of the services for obvious reasons. But just by looking at this diagram, you can say that at the bottom, that service is the broken service. And on the top, you have the yellow boxes. Those are the affected services. And the thickness of the line represents the number of calls that upstream is making to the downstream. And the color of the lines indicates the change in latency and error rate. So this is gives a more visual representation of the state of the system rather than like looking at a set of tabular data. Okay, so InVisualize also saves the state of the system or the snapshot of the system continuously so that you can replay it. So this is a cool feature. For example, if you had an incident, you can go to the start time of the incident. Then you can see the state of the system at that point of time. Then you can keep on playing it, like how the system changed during the incident and how it recovered after the incident. It's a cool feature. It's very useful when it comes to postmortem, and also if you want to see how your service is performing during an incident. Also, the alert correlation system ranks the services based on how responsible it is from any particular node. Okay, so that ranking varies depending on from which point of the call graph or the dependency or the microservices you are looking. So this is accessible from an API, and the scores are always like 0 to 100. If it is closer to 100, that means the system is confident. If it is closer to 0, it's not very confident. Okay, so if there is an incident, these two systems, the alert correlation system and the metrics correlation system, the use case is similar. You want to find the responsible service for a given service. Okay, so we decided to combine the power of both this system using a recommendation engine. So recommendation engine sits on top of alert correlation and metrics correlation. It takes a service, a colo, a start time and end time. It can be like a time in the past or last 10 minutes to now. So you can enter this data from a auto remediation system or any other system which you want to use the event correlation data, or you can manually go and enter if you are just want to or trying to find the responsible service. It contacts the alert correlation system and metric correlation system. It gets the recommendation from both these systems, and it combines the recommendations based on some rules and the experience we have put in the system. It will combine that results and give it to the user or the calling service. It shows the responsible service, the service which it thinks is the responsible service, and the correlation confidence score, which is the score that tells how confident this system is about its recommendation. If you want to escalate to SRE team, it also gives the responsible team's email address. Also, it includes a lot of other information which is helpful when you are trying to troubleshoot something to analyze the root cause, such as the changes that happened during that time window, the deployments that were done, or the experiments that were running during that time. Okay, so overall, if you are wondering what I was talking about, then this is how it looks like. Okay, on the right-hand side, you can see the call graph framework. It has an API, so and it has a backend and a database to store the dependency graph. On the left-hand side, you can see the event correlation system. It can be called from automations, or you can user can use it using an UI. Our recommendation engine sits above the site stabilizer and visualizes our metrics correlation and alert correlation system. On the left-hand side bottom, you can see the K-means model. This is generated offline. And these all consume data from our monitoring system. Okay, so this is the overall picture of our event correlation system. And the main motivation is to give ideas how we implemented rather than like exactly how you wanted to implement. So maybe you can take the idea and implement it in your company, hopefully. With that, I'll pass to Rajanish to give the big picture how it is used in LinkedIn and the takeaways when we were building this system. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Ranjit. So a lot of people may be wondering why so much effort has been put in these things. I showed you a graph at the start that as service complexity increases, there is a drop in reliability and learning curve. A simpler solution would have been that don't build complex services. And if I had given you that solution, most of you, including me, would have walked out of this room, correct? So that's not the solution. Like, we are going to build complex services, and that is why it is needed that we have these systems in place, these tools in place to make sure that things can be resolved easily. Just to recap, Ranjit talked about call graph, he talked about metrics correlation, he talked about alert correlation. All these three systems combined give you a recommendation, right? But what do you do with the recommendation, right? We still don't want people to be looking at that recommendation and trying to figure out what is the action that has been taken. So there should be a system to complete that action, and that is where the 100% auto remediation works, like no manual intervention. So I'll explain how we at LinkedIn have implemented that it actually involves, it actually doesn't need any human intervention. So this is the graph, this is the big picture which I have, where you see a latency alert which has popped up, right? And there is a system called NERSC, which is an orchestrator. So what you can do, and NERSC was a system which was built in the past by LinkedIn, and what you can do with NERSC is you can write action plans. Right. So you can decide that if this is a condition, do something. For instance, restart the service, pull out X host out of rotation. These action plans can be written on NERSC. Right. So we try to leverage this. So the flow goes something like this. So an alert pops up, for instance, a latency alert. It goes to NERSC. And NERSC contacts the event correlation API asking the question, what's wrong with the service? And event correlation with all the systems which you explained in the past will give that, okay, this is the service which we feel is wrong, is not behaving the way it should be for this alert. Now, the service that recommend, the service recommendation may not be the service for which the alert has popped up. It may be a downstream service, or it may be definitely at some point of time, it may be a service for which the alert has popped up. It is all the that decision making or that recommendation is done by event event correlation infrastructure. So once it sends that feedback to NERSC, depending on what is the NERSC plan you have created, there is an action which is taken. For instance, if you have said that, okay, my confidence score should be 85, and at, if the confidence score is greater than 85, the NERSC plan should restart the service. So NERSC plan, the plan will go, it will say that the recommendation score right now is 91, and I need to restart the service, and NERSC will go ahead and restart the service on the host, and your issue is remediated. Or in some scenarios, you may say that, okay, if my score is 80%, don't do anything, just do an escalation. Right. NERSC will do an escalation via an automated tool which is called Iris, which is again a LinkedIn homegrown tool. It will either call you, SMS or message depending on how you have configured. It will send a notification and not take an action. So it is very flexible as far as configuration is concerned. You can play around with a lot of things. You can see that what are the thresholds, what are the confidence scores which work for you. So this is how it fits into the LinkedIn infrastructure. Going to the last slide, it's not the last slide, but basically talk about key takeaways, like what are the things which you can take away and see if it works for you and implement. So one of the things which we did was call graph. So call graph definitely reduces your learning curve. So at the microservices, as we have been calling out, that at microservices it changes a lot. It's very important that there's an automated system which takes care of all these things and builds, keeps on updating the data. And that is where a person doesn't need to spend a lot of time on understanding what the changes are going on. The system will do it for you. You just give a service and you will see what is the downstream and upstream connections for you. Second thing is SRE workload. It's very obvious that if I keep on decreasing the MTTTR, the time we spend on resolving the incidents or resolving the issues goes low, and SREs can spend more time on something which they'd like. So definitely a good reduction on the SRE workload. Good reduction on false escalations. So when we talk about alert correlation and we say that we are able to correlate alert A to a downstream alert, alert B, and I want to only escalate to the owner of the service B, lot of false escalations go down the drain, and I generate, like, rather than 5 alerts, I'm generating only 1 alert. So a lot reduction in false escalations can be done. Flexibility. So this system itself gives you a lot of flexibility depending on how you want. So first flexibility it gives is how do you want to create your data set. For instance, if you are looking at your system which get where changes are being pushed every week, probably you will want to create the data set for last 1 month, so that you get all the, you can take care of all the seasonality, how the traffic is increasing, how your system is changing. That gets normalized and you get decent thresholds. If you are a organization which is basically pushes code every 6 months, you can actually create the data set based on a year's data. Right, so that will take care of all your seasonality, how your system is changing, what is the impact of the new products which you have pushed or the new features you have pushed. The second flexibility which I want to talk about is what is the action you want to take. So if you see, if when I talked about plans, you can create multiple plans depending on different confidence scores. So if you want to just get an escalation at score X, yes, go ahead and create a plan. If you want to take an act, if you want the system to take an action for score Y, yeah, you can configure that. So it offers you a lot of flexibility. The last and final thing which we feel is a good takeaway is that you actually don't need to set a static threshold for your metrics. So what the system itself does, that it looks at the data of the past, whether it is 6 months, 1 year, or 1 week, whatever data you're, and creates its own dynamic thresholds. So you don't have to worry about fine tuning your thresholds on a regular basis. The system will do it for you. So if every Christmas your traffic is increasing and your metrics are going high, that will be taken into consideration by K-means when it creates the cluster data set. So that's one of the big things which we want to say here, that a lot of time we keep on taking a look and revisiting that whether it's a right threshold. You may not need to do that. I would like to introduce the team at last. So this is a combined effort between Sunnyvale team and Bangalore team. So Ranjit, you saw here who presented. Apart from that, Kishore and Reynold are the two other folks who are working out of Bangalore and developing this tool. We have Michael and Rusty from US who have been working on this tool. So this is the complete team we have here who actually worked and developed this complete project.